Thank you for coming. Can you please stand so we can say the Pledge of Allegiance? Tara?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Is our high school representative here?
Good evening. My name is Christian Lamantia, and I'm the Board of Ed rep from student government at the high school. Since the last Board of Ed meeting, JFK's extracurriculars have kicked off into high gear. On September 26th, the annual club fair introduced students to the various club options offered at our school. As always, the gym was packed with students eager to participate in their school community. Back to school night on September 17th was successfully carried out, thanks to student volunteers, club representatives, and of course our dedicated faculty. I would also like to commend five of our seniors for being named semifinalists in the 2020 National Merit Scholarship Competition. An additional 19 seniors were recognized as commended students, and three were recognized as National Hispanic Scholars. These students have earned these achievements through exceptional PSAT scores from the 2018 exam. In our athletic department, the Hawks girls swim team had swimmers place first and third at their meet with Wantagh. In addition, the Hawks boys volleyball team celebrated being ranked fourth on Long Island, according to Newsday. The annual senior class photo on the bleachers was taken on September 24th. Preparations for the freshman student government elections are underway and coming soon. The drama club has begun rehearsals for their fall play, Our Town, which will be taking place on November 22nd and 23rd. DECA, our most popular business club, inducted over 100 new members during their installation on October 3rd. In the future, we can look forward to parent-teacher conferences on the 10th and 15th, the PSAT hosted by POB on October 16th, an in-school presentation about the science of drugs, addiction, and the brain hosted hosted in school for all students by Dr. Dewey on October 16th. That is with an additional presentation at night for parents, as well as homecoming on October 26th. Progress on homecoming banners representing each grade has already begun, in addition to preparations for the homecoming village by many of our clubs. I encourage you all to join us at this community building event. Thank you and good night.
Thank you very much. Board announcements? Jody?
2 weeks from today, the PTA and the Board of Education will be co-hosting Meet the Candidates Night. We do not have a tremendous number of confirmed candidates yet, but we do have some. We will be updating throughout the week. We have invited everyone who's running for positions in town of Oyster Bay, as well as Nassau County Legislature, so keep your eye on the PTA websites. They'll be updating throughout the week as candidates confirm. We hope you can make it. Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody else? Dr. Lewis, superintendent announcements.
Not very much. It was a short week. I do want to alert everyone to the October 16th, as our student has already alerted us. Dr. Dewey will be here. It will be a night event, as well as during the school day for the high school students. That's a pretty important presentation. We've been asking for Dr. Dewey to come in, and so I hope the parents will mark that. It's on drug and alcohol abuse and some physiological effects, and he's an exceptional speaker. We've heard him several times, and I do hope that people will consider going on October 16th. Also, on October 25th, we will be hosting a ceremony of Pathways to Peace. It will be in honor of Mahatma Gandhi's 150th birthday in collaboration with the Shanti Fund. Also, it is the weekend of Diwali, so it will be a wonderful event, K through 12. We'll have performances. We'll have a peace walk. We will have children who have will be performing in song and dance, but also some artwork will be displayed. It will be a wonderful evening of food, dancing, and just camaraderie to celebrate peace in the world. October 25th, it will be at POB Middle School. I want to thank the three principals that are part of the committee and Ben Wiley. It will be the Stratford Road principal, the high school principal, and the Alice Bowman. They're part of the committee. I think Marie Carnesi also part of the committee to collaborate and put forth this wonderful evening. So I hope everyone will think about coming and just celebrate the thought of peace in the world.
Thank you. Right now, we're going to take out of order 11.3, which is our superintendent search consultant contract, so that we can vote and introduce our consultants to the community. So can I get a motion? Thank you, Ginger. A second, Seth. All those in favor? Thank you. I'd like to welcome and introduce Bob Fryer and Joanne Kaplan. We're a little sad that we have to do this, but we are excited to begin our search. So would you like to say a few words?
Hi, everyone. First, we'd like to thank the board for your confidence in us, and we're excited to work with every single one of you, and we're also equally excited to meet everyone in the community. There'll be a lot of community involvement coming up, but I don't want to say, I know Dr. Lewis's shoes are incredibly hard to fill, so we're not going to say we're trying to fill her shoes, because those shoes are not, they just can't be filled, but we'll be helping, looking for bringing someone new in for the board to decide and hire for the next superintendent starting in July. So we're looking forward to it. Again, I'm Bob Fryer. This is my partner, Joanne.
Yes, I just thank you again for the opportunity. We look forward to meeting all of you. We have put up a link where you can send in information to us for the profile creation for the new superintendent. I also have some calling cards here with the email address on it. So please, we will have forums where we'd love to hear your voice, but if you're not able to attend any of the forums, we ask you to please send us an email. I should say the board wants to hear your voice, so please send us an email. Oh, important. Whatever data we receive, there will be no names attached to it. So the board will receive a climate report at the end, which will be November 25th is the cutoff date, but it will be anonymous. So whatever you send to us as far as characteristics for the profile for the next superintendent, the information will be given to the board, but not the names. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. I think that's what Gina is telling them. She'll put it on the table. Yeah. Thank you very much. We're going to also take out of order, because we have so many students here and we know they need to get home and do some homework or studying. So we're going to open public participation only to discuss the calendar issue. So if anybody would like to come up to the microphone to discuss the calendar issue, now's your time. Oh, I guess, do I still have to read the statement?
Yeah.
Okay. District policy number 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall, one, state their name and address, and two, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking if a non-resident. The policy prohibits public discussion on matters relating to staff and students at which their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process, or those of others could in some way be violated. As a reminder, an audio recording of this meeting, including public participation, is being made and will be posted on the district's website. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. We thank you in advance for being respectful of our other speakers, the Board of Education, and all staff members. The floor is now open.
Thank you so much to the board for giving us the opportunity to represent our community concern here. Yes, hi, hello, good evening, everyone. I'm gonna hand the mic to my son, Nabil Magda, who's a freshman in GFK High School, and he's gonna say a few things.
Can we just ask that you give your name before you speak?
Okay, so my name is Aisha Magda. I live at 1 Sally Lane, Plainview, New York. I've been living in Plainview for about 19 years now. Not ready, so, okay. Do you wanna go?
Hello, everyone. My name is Alka Iqbal. I live at 6 Sagamore Street. I want to thank you as well for giving us the opportunity to speak. And this is my daughter.
Hi, my name is Myra Iqbal. My address is 6 Sagamore Street, and my school is Judy Jacobs Parkway Elementary School. I think Eid should be a day off, because I stay with my family and go out for lunch. I go to pray at the masjid and open presents. So that is why I want Eid to be a day off. Oh, and also at lunch, my grandma and grandpa come and we wear bangles.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good evening, Board of Education. My name is Nabil Magda, and I'm currently in ninth grade. I lived in Plainview all of my life and attended Parkway, Matlin, and now POB JFK High School. As an American Muslim, I'm here to tell you why we should have off from school for our Eid holiday. Just to give you some insight, Eid happens twice a year. The first Eid is Eid al-Fitr, which concludes the 30-day period known as fasting. 30-day period known as Ramadan. On this holiday, we eat a big and well-deserved breakfast with our family after attending prayer service in the morning. Children receive gifts from their loved ones and spend the rest of their day traveling to their family and friends' houses in celebration. It is one of my favorite days of the year. The second Eid is called Eid al-Adha, and it commemorates the end of the holy pilgrimage Hajj. Again, we start our day off with the morning prayer and continue the day celebrating with our families. Due to the high academic demand in our community, the students are afraid to take days off, even if the absence is excused, out of fear that it will reflect poorly on their performance. Not having off for either of these holidays creates a burden on Muslim kids. I've often had multiple tests and projects scheduled on Eid day, for which I have had to come in and therefore miss out on my celebration with my friends and family. Making up these tests and projects also becomes a hassle for teachers and students alike. Due to these reasons, many students are hesitant to partake in Eid festivities, and I would like to ask the district to strongly consider making these two Eids official district holidays, as they have been in NYC public schools and as well as neighboring districts. It would be amazing to see our district provide the same benefits to our students. Thank you so much for your time and consideration on this matter.
Thank you.
My name's Sydney Sussman, and I live on 2 Sagamore Street, Plainview, and I go to Judy Jacobs Parkway. My name is Sydney Sussman. Many of my friends and neighbors celebrate Eid. I feel really badly that they have to either miss school or miss out on celebrating their special day. I know that they have fun traditions with their families on Eid, like I do with my family on my holidays. I think that our school calendar should include a day off on Eid because school is closed for other religious holidays and it is not fair. Many people celebrate Eid and are equally important members of our community.
Thank you. Thank
My name is Alina Iqbal. I live on 6 Sagamore Street. Before I state my request, I would like to share a little bit about Eid. Right before Eid, we fast for Ramadan. Ramadan is a month of praying and being thankful. We fast for 30 days. You break your fast at the end of the day. Once it is Eid, we celebrate and eat lots of good food. We even stay up late the night before and put henna on our hands. We put on new clothes and head to morning prayers. We would really appreciate if you give us this day off to spend with our family. The first reason why I would like no school on Eid is because I would really like to spend this very special day with my family and friends from the mosque. Another reason why I would like a day off of school for Eid is because we don't want to miss something exciting like a field trip if we take off of school for Eid. We also can't get to school late because the buses for the field trip usually leave 9:30 on the dot. If we get to school late, then we won't be able to do any of that. The last reason why I would like a day off for Eid is because all the teachers can get a day off too. They work very hard to teach us, and they deserve a day off. This is why I think we should get a day off of school for Eid. I hope you agree with me.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Noor Fazi, and I live in 42 Westbury Avenue. Eid is a holiday where we spend time with our family. The things we do on this day is we go to morning prayer, and we have a big breakfast together and open presents and have the whole day to be together. But the problem is we usually have school on this day. And it's hard because we don't know if we should go to school and not miss work and not be with our family, or we should stay home with our family and miss work. And even if we don't go to school, we're still thinking about the work we're missing. It would be so much easier if we just had the day off to be with our family. And that's why I think it's so important to have off on my holiday Eid.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Noreen Kazi. I live on 10 Presidential Drive South, and I just want to thank you for this opportunity for us here, and then I want to introduce my son.
Hi, my name is Yad Kazi. I go to Matlin Middle School, and hopefully next week I'll be your 7th grade president.
A little electioneering.
I wanted to tell you why I would love to be off from school on Eid. On Eid, we wear new clothes, go to Eid prayer in the morning, where we get to see all our friends and family. Then we spend time with our families going from house to house and eating. We eat a lot on Eid. I am the youngest in my family and have 2 older brothers that are 7 years older than me. Sometimes my holiday was a bit different. Some holidays it was just me and my mom, because my brothers had a double science AP they didn't want to miss or a test they had to take. Now my brothers are in college and will not always be home for the holidays. I wish I could have spent time celebrating with them, like my friends were able to celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah with their siblings. I'm sad I missed the opportunity to spend Eid with them. I don't want any other younger kid to go through what I had to. Please, give off on Eid so families can spend time with each other. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Paris Qureshi. I'm a mother of 4, new to the district. I'm at 16 Bradford Road. I have 4 little ones entering the school district, and you're going to hear from a lot of kids about how important it is for their sense of identity and their sense of self. These aren't mine, by the way. These are my friends. My 4 are in bed. But how important it is for them to develop a healthy sense of self and identity and confidence in their identity, especially in the current environment and the kind of rhetoric that we deal with day in, day out. I can speak for my peers. It's very difficult back then. It's even more difficult now. But aside from that, what I really wanted to share with all of you was there was a really great event earlier this year about what kinds of students we wanted to produce going out into the world, talking about the totality of our experience in this district, of the curriculum in this district, and what we really wanted to become. And it was interesting because the dialogue in the room was really about empathy and the kinds of empathetic people that we wanted to create going out into the world, the kinds of leaders that we wanted to put out into the world from POB, right? So this is that step. This is that opportunity to create that dialogue, create that conversation and that platform to keep moving that needle forward, right? Think about a calendar and what it actually means. Yes, it's a day off for faculty and staff and students and what have you, but it's also a chance to actually put something on a calendar where a parent is looking at it going, I have off, my kids have off for Eid al-Adha, and I'm not really sure what that is. And it creates that opportunity for a dialogue, for them to go to the Google gods or their friends or whomever to ask the question, what is this, and to learn more about it. So thank you so much for considering the proposal and considering the change and giving the community an opportunity to share their thoughts, but also looking at the collective objective for the school district and what they're intending to achieve.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Mona Ismail. I live on 17 Mitchell Avenue, and I think if we had Eid off, it would be a much better day. I don't like having to miss schoolwork if in order to celebrate with my family. And all of my friends get their holidays off, and I would like to have the opportunity as well. This would also be a great opportunity for my friends and others to learn about the holiday. Family is important. I think that it would be very great for all of the Muslims to have Eid off so we could celebrate with family. Eid means so much to all Muslims, and I think it would be a great opportunity for all Muslims to have Eid off.
Thank you very much.
What school are you?
I go to Pasadena Elementary School.
Good evening, Board of Ed. My name is Fatima Kalfan, and I'm a senior at POB JFK High School. Now, you may be wondering why this even matters to me as a senior, because I'll be graduating soon and off to college in a few months. But I'm not here for me. I'm here for my siblings and the young Muslim kids in our community. I'm here to speak for them because I want them to have an opportunity that I never had. The opportunity of not carrying the weight and guilt of choosing school over sacred family time and religious duties. All in efforts of trying to avoid the stress caused from just missing one day. In high school, missing just one day can make you feel like you're weeks behind, especially in challenging academic courses like those honors and AP classes. But even if you're taking a Regents course, the weight doesn't go away, trust me. Eid no longer feels the same, especially when it's Eid and I have to wake up at 6 a.m. to go to school, to take that test, to take that quiz, to hand in that assignment. The day of Eid is a happy one, a day which I truly try to cherish, a day that I really look forward to, a day when I can hand out baked goods to my neighbors, have breakfast with my family, invite friends over for Eid dinner, say a prayer at the mosque, a day when I can laugh until I cry and eat until I can't eat anymore. But I never complain. I have fasted while taking the Regents, the APs, and finals too, because my religion means a lot to me, but my school also means a lot to me too. I value my education, and I don't want to fall behind, and I don't want my siblings and the other children to fall behind either. And this is why I believe we need this day off, this joyous day to be spent with family and friends and not with worry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Eliabas Kofan. I live on 32 Central Park Road, and I go to POBMS, which is Plainview Old Bethpage Middle School, and I'm currently an eighth grader. I firmly believe that we should have Eid off as a holiday. Eid is a holiday that allows Muslim kids like me to spend time with my family, have a grand dinner, and create new memories with close friends and family members that will last a lifetime. However, I feel that I cannot do this because Eid is not a school holiday, and I have many doubts about whether I should stay home and spend time with family or go to school, so I do not miss anything important. When I do stay at home on Eid to spend time with my family, I do not enjoy and celebrate Eid as I used to because I'm constantly having thoughts like, should I have gone to school? Am I missing out on any important information? What if I have a pop quiz the next day and don't know any of the material? In addition, I also have a grandfather who is ill, and I want to spend time with him. But since we don't have a holiday for Eid in school, it is holding me back on Eid to spend time with him even more. I'm in accelerated classes for science and math, and it is crucial for me not to skip any school days, as every lesson is important. So I have to go to school on Eid, even though I want to spend time with my grandfather and my family. Also, this holiday benefits everyone, not just Muslims. Everyone gets a day off, and it starts many conversations with people who want to learn more about the holiday. School holidays like Hanukkah, Yom Kippur, and Rosh Hashanah, and more, helped create dialogue with others, and the dialogue help brings unity and understanding between different faiths in our school. That is why I believe Eid should be considered a school holiday. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Hala Sheikh. I live on 45 Midwood Drive. This is my daughter. What's your name?
Izza.
And what school do you go to?
Stratford Road.
And what grade are you in?
Not in grade. Kindergarten. Kindergarten.
We've been a resident of Plainview over 20 years. I went to school here, and I would love for the opportunity for our kids. I have three kids, two twins, 6 months old, and I would love for them to have the opportunity to have Eid off. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else that wanted to speak? I think that's it. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all your well thought out on our articulate presentation. We really appreciate your input, and we're going to agenda it for a future meeting. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to continue with our meeting now. We're going to go on to reports and discussions. Our technology update, Dr. Ladiko.
Good evening. I'd like to begin this evening's technology update with an overview of the status of where we are with our Chromebook one-to-one program and our Chromebook initiatives across the district. Over the summer, we purchased, and at the beginning of the school year, we refreshed our incoming grade 5 and 9 student Chromebooks across the district. That's for JFK High School and for the two middle schools. The outgoing grades 8 and 12, those Chromebooks, we found much purpose for that, to use as loaners for students when their Chromebook needs repair. We use those Chromebooks where they sign it out. They're able to take that Chromebook home and continue instruction. We use them for parts and for replacements when we need them. So we're trying to get as much value out of our purchase as possible with the Chromebooks. That's all one-to-one for JFK and in the middle schools. In our elementary schools, as you know, we have a one-to-one card program where we have Chromebooks, carts for the classrooms. And this year we added 4 carts at Old Bethpage Elementary School for grade 2, 5 carts for Pasadena Elementary Schools for grade 2, 4 carts for JJ Parkway, and 5 carts for Stratford Road. That covers every section in the second grade. And just to give you an idea of what we're managing on a daily basis with the Chromebooks, we have over 4,543 student Chromebooks from grades 2 to 12 that we manage, we distribute. As you know, the one-to-one Chromebooks we distribute during parent night, student-teacher night distribution, and 548 iPads for grades K and 1. Another one of our instructional technology initiatives is the interactive smart boards. So as you know, we have the traditional smart board with the projector, and we've taken a proactive approach in replacing these. So it's important that we do this now so we don't end up in a budget year where 1 year all the smart boards start to fail, and then we don't have the resources or the funds to replace them. So we're taking a strategic approach for replacing these boards. This year, we replaced 4 mobile library units. These are smart boards with the televisions, the LED television that you probably have at home, on wheels. They're based in the library, but they're mobile to go anywhere in the building. They could go to the cafeterias for a special meeting. They could even go to the gymnasium when needed. So we have completed that installation. Also for the elementary schools, we have 20 classroom units that we're in the process of completing. Stratford Road is completed. There were 5 boards for Stratford Road. JJ Parkway, we completed 3 out of the 5 of that installation. And Old Bethpage and Pasadena are currently in progress. And we have 2 boards, as you know, the new construction at Old Bethpage. We have 2 boards ready to be installed once the construction is finished. For our middle schools, we added classrooms, as you know, for this year. So over the summer, we purchased and we installed 4 new LED boards. You know, we're under the model of if we're going to put a smart board where it never existed before, if there's new construction, we're going straight to the LED TVs. We're not going to put a projector that we're going to replace at some point. So we're using the state-of-the-art technology. Both middle schools are also entitled to 10 smart board refreshes, which is replacing the current projectors inside those rooms, and that's also in progress. High school, we have 20 for the entire building. That installation is in progress as we speak. Other instructional technology initiatives included a relocation of the Z-Space Lab. If you're familiar with POB Middle School, we moved it across the hall. It's adjacent to the library. It looks great. It's in a nice place. It's accessible to the students. And it just makes sense with the flow from the library to the Z-Space Lab. We also have a smart board inside that lab. That was one of the 4 additional classrooms that we completed. We added 6 Lenovo computer workstations. These are the same type of computer workstations that we use at the high school to support our art programs. Adobe Creative Cloud, the same software and the same power on those computers that the high school students have. This way, we have continuity in what the students are learning in the lower grade levels to when they go to high school. We refreshed, which means we replaced 175 Dell Optiplex instructional workstations, specifically targeted to support our instructional goals at the high school, content area related. This was a big one. Dr. O'Meara and I were working at the NWEA with Jen Lagatuda and Jeff. And a big part of that was how are we going to roll this out in a timely fashion? And we utilized the power of ClassLink to do this by auto-rostering the NWEA, the students to the teachers' rosters so that we could streamline when they take these assessments. I'd just like to add a little caveat here. Is we're the first in the country to do this with NWEA and ClassLink. They met the one roster standard, and we worked with their engineers directly on that. And that's from grades 2 to 8. We also refreshed over 135 single sign-on applications. Those of you familiar with ClassLink, that's a portal where your students go to and our teachers go to when they're giving instruction with one sign-in to get the customized applications that they require for instruction. So they're not memorizing passwords and usernames for all different applications. And we're continuing that with our online textbooks and other library databases. We've included that all into ClassLink. This is something really interesting that we implemented this year also with the printer management. And let me explain to you exactly what that is. We found Car Xerox is a company we use for our copiers, our photocopiers. And they currently service our photocopiers. But they have another service where they would provide the toner cartridges for our desktop printers across the district and repair services. So we implemented this COSER that BOCES had to expedite and get cartridges straight to the buildings. So typically, they would come to us at the Central Office of Technology, and we would distribute it. It'd be some lag time here. So this, we trained our computer aides. This went off in September, and we're monitoring it. We want to see the success of the program and see if this is something worth our while continuing. We have many other district-wide technology initiatives. A lot of these have to do with security. Security is a big issue right now with those school districts, as you're aware of. The first one is our Cisco IP phone handsets. This was a two-year plan. This is phase two of that plan, actually replacing the handsets across the district and upgrading the firmware to keep the latest software on the phone in the firmware. Related to that is something called Call Manager, Unity, and Emergency Responder. These are all integrated into our communication systems that support us during emergencies and our communication services throughout the year. We also focused on throughput. What could we do for our network to increase speed and performance for our end users? That's our teachers, our students, our staff, our administrative offices. So we have 10 gigabit Ethernet cards that we installed into our ESX hosts, which does that for us, and that's completed. We also updated the code version to the latest Cisco versions on all of our switches district-wide. That's the enhances not only network performance, but security to stay a step ahead of people who may be trying to harm our systems. This is part of security too, re-imaged over 1,600 instructional administrative computers over the summer. That's the latest operating system, Windows 10 from Microsoft. We have a lockdown group policy template that enhances performance and workstation security. Worked with Chris on, we wanted to see how we could expedite our updating scholarship with the latest photographs. So Chris and I put our heads together. We met with Infinite Campus, and we created also, this is a first in the country too, with scholarship, we created an integration where the photos automatically go from Infinite Campus to scholarship on a nightly basis. So if a student comes into the district tonight, they're in scholarship the next day. And that enhances security for us, where the security guards, people who are checking the students' photos, know that that student is the right student in the building. We also have our hands in the cafeteria, too. So NutriKids, we updated 13 point-of-sale systems. This is where our students check out their lunch in the cafeterias. That's completed. And the last one's an interesting. I'll just contextualize this a little bit for you. We have the new smart boards, and they're very smart, these LED TVs. But one thing that they were doing, they have motion sensors, and they come on when they sense motion. But sometimes a teacher in the classroom doesn't want a board to pop on by itself. So what we did is we implemented a scalar firmware upgrade that we worked with Smart on, where these boards will just kind of go to sleep. Actually, it's after 55 minutes in the classroom. This way, it comes on when the teacher wants it to come on, not automatically sensing motion, which is convenient, but not in practice in a classroom. You want the board on when you want it on. And we want them to go to sleep after 55 minutes because that's after a period in the classroom and to conserve energy, too. And that's one big advantage of these LED smart boards. The traditional smart boards are a projector, a big light bulb burning on a board all day long. This is a television, which is very energy efficient. There's some pictures of our students in action with our teachers in the classrooms across the district.
Thank you very much for such a comprehensive.
I have a question.
Yeah, she's going. I'm sure the board has some questions.
Yes.
Thank you, Guy. What is the life expectancy of a Chromebook?
Okay. We plan for a 4-year cycle for a Chromebook. We're looking at Chrome states 6 years where they'll stop giving us updates on a Chromebook. That doesn't mean we still can't use it for, like I said, repurpose it for parts, loaners. So that's what we're looking at right now. We're 4 years. That's why when we do our refresh for the incoming grades 5 and incoming grade 9, that Chromebook is theirs for 4 years. That's the life cycle in the hands of a student. After that, we repurpose it. But it's a good question because Chrome is saying, okay, after 6 years, we may stop providing you the updates for that version of Chrome that you have, for that Chromebook version.
So then year 7, let's say that's what happens and you don't have, what do we do with it? It's just for parts for new?
Yes. And eventually they'll be obsoleted. I'll make a recommendation to Mr. Cunningham. He'll send it to you, and then they'll be obsoleted like our computer workstations and all the other devices in the district.
Okay, and just one other thing. The carts, do all the buildings have their carts yet, or are we waiting?
So we're talking about we don't have carts anymore in the middle schools and high schools because of the one-to-one program, but the elementary schools, we have carts from grades 2 to 4 for each section.
Okay.
For Chromebooks.
Okay, thanks, Guy.
Thank you again for putting this together. Very comprehensive.
Thank you.
I have two questions. One's security and one's regarding one of the points that you put in here. I'm going to ask the bullet point that you mentioned we're refreshing 175 Dell Optiplex instructional workstations at POB High School. We're doing one-to-one Chrome, correct?
Yes.
So the workstations, who is that for? And if every student's going to be carrying their Chromebook with them, do we still need a desktop?
Yes, there are some applications. I'll give you an example. If you work in our technology and art wing, we have art labs that require much more powerful computers and processors to do what they need to do to run the Adobe Creative Cloud efficiently and to emulate what they would be doing in high school and even in the workforce. These are the same applications that people are using. So the Chromebook is good for certain things, but not for everything.
Okay. Thank you for answering that and clarifying. Then security. Third-party vendors like Scholarship, Infinite Campus, NutriKits. What's our security with providing a picture from Infinite Campus to Scholarship? I just want to make sure we're reading, that all the security is for our privacy of our students. Where's that and how's that working?
Okay, so if you're familiar with Education Law 2D, is being finalized at this point in time, and these are guidelines that these vendors have to follow for security of personal data that you're speaking of. And that is when this framework is completed by the state, they're going to roll that out to the districts, and it's a mandate that we have to follow.
Right, so right now, if it gets hacked and the law isn't written, what are we doing?
When we contract with these vendors, it goes through our attorneys, and those questions are asked back and forth between, what that contract is all about, how the data is being protected.
If I can just add, because I work on this with Dr. Ladico, Dr. Molieri, and our attorneys at Guercio & Guercio, so just because 2D hasn't yet been passed doesn't mean that there weren't already requirements for data privacy and security. And those contracts would go between the vendor, Scholarship, NutriKids, Infinite Campus, and our attorneys until that contract language was hammered out. As those data privacy regulations evolve, those are updated. And there are some vendors that have fallen out and we cannot use. So I'll give one that we're working on with now that the board approved, I think it was July, an application called Choosy. High school students were going to be able to order their lunches remotely, an online app. However, the company, even though they signed the contract, once we started getting down to brass tacks, they could not comply with the data privacy and security. So we can't move forward with them until they position themselves that way. There's also an online registration application we're looking at for childcare called Jumbala. They're not even close. And they're like, well, can you send us something to consider? We'll just, you know, you send us your data. This, they literally said, you send us your data, it'll be okay. So, you know, there are vendors that fall out of the ability to work with us because they can't comply. And 2D really formalizes that a great deal.
Okay. I just want to also just make sure I understand that. But, you know, you hear Equifax and Capital One, and I just want to make sure that our information is locked up tight, and that, you know, I understand that this is being hammered out, but I just want to make sure that of that fact that this is our parents are trusting us with this. And, you know, and my last question is, and I guess it piggybacks on this, and we've talked about this a little bit in prior meetings, the ransomware. So where are we with that as far as, because it's part of the technology update. Yes. I mean, I don't know if you want to, it looks like Rich is ready.
I'll take that from the insurance perspective. Because I know many of my colleagues are telling their boards that they're covered up to $1 million or $2 million or $3 million. Like our cyber insurance has limits up to $3 million. However, that's not true for cyber or ransomware. It is intentionally kept low because those who are trying to collect the ransom will be looking at what your limits are. And if you have a limit of $3 million, they're going after $3 million. Ransomware coverage is $50,000. So in doing so, much like Rockville Center, same insurer, they got off the hook for $88,000. The insurance company covered the rest after the $15,000 deductible. So the insurer did go above their written limit. But that was part of the conversation between Rockville Center, the insurers, the federal agencies, and those who really infected the system, which were located in Asia.
Right. But then we also, I think we discussed, too, was there something about, yes, that's the insurance, but how are we protecting? So do we have duplication? Is there duplicity so that we don't have to necessarily have to bargain with?
Well, yeah, we have backups within the district. We have remote backups off-site, and there are other measures. I wrote a report to the board on recommendations that I had after meeting with our.
I know, but we just have that. We have systems instances in.
Yes.
So, okay. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate the update.
By the way, you know, the edge of the cuts both ways. And one of the things that my organization, the superintendents, is arguing with the state on is they are not going to have College Board release the names of the test results from the SATs, PSATs, and ACTs to colleges unless parents opt in. So we have been arguing with them that we would like an opt-out rather than opt. Can you imagine? I'm asking for an opt-out. Because here's the issue. I am now an opt-outer. Because the issue is that colleges, especially the small colleges, will never, ever get the information to recruit children, as they do. You know, the whole college process relies on them getting the SATs, the profile, to then send the information to homes. If the parent has to opt in, we're going to lose a lot of parents just not following through on the opting in. So that is currently before the Board of Regents, and we are making that argument. So if anyone has an opportunity to speak to a Board of Regents about it, that's very important.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I see that our external auditor is here, so we're going to go to our third report and then go back to our second report. Welcome.
Thank you so much. This is only my fourth meeting tonight.
By the way, we are required to have our auditors in October. Every district has to have their audits done and reported publicly by October 15th. So external auditors are very busy the first 15 days of October.
Manual. Okay, well, thank you for inviting me to present the results of our audit. We did meet with the audit committee last week to go in depth on our audit, but I'm doing an overview. I prepared a PowerPoint just to give you an overview of the results of the audit. You received an unmodified opinion, which is the best opinion you can get as a school district. We had no issues giving you a clean opinion. Rich Cunningham, the business office, they all do a really good job getting the audit ready for us, and everything runs very smoothly. So I really had, you know, positive things to say in the audit committee as well as today. We also, in addition to giving you an opinion on the financials, we also look at your internal controls. And we had no material issues with your internal controls. However, we always make recommendations, but there was nothing really that we considered material as far as issues with your internal controls. Like I said, the business office was very helpful and very cooperative during the whole process. So the management letter is where we really give you recommendations with internal controls. And really, there was only one area that we had comments on, and it had to do with the extra classroom accounts. So the areas within the extra classroom accounts that we did have some recommendations had to do with cash receipts, cash disbursements, and charters. In addition to giving you recommendations for the current year, we also like to see that our prior year recommendations are implemented and that the business office is taking our audits seriously. So with the exception of the extra classroom cash receipts, all the prior year recommendations were implemented. So that really shows you that your business office is very proactive and, you know, really wants to do a good job and tries to make their internal controls stronger. You already have very strong controls, but they are always open for any additional recommendations that we do provide to them. Okay, so now the next slide really is an overview of the financial statements. And the first I wanted to talk about was the general fund. So the general fund balance did decrease this year, and I'm going to go into specifics on the next couple of slides. Compared to last year, it did decrease $4.1 million. The restricted fund balance, which is what I'm going to really go into detail on the next slides, is your fund balance with restrictions, which is your reserves. So the decrease in the restricted fund balance of $5.8 million really was due to board-authorized transfers into the reserves of $3.6 million, plus we allocated interest to the reserves. And then it was offset by the use of the reserves of $9,650,000. The increase in your special revenue fund, which is where you have your child's program, that did increase $65,000 this year. And as you know, the board does provide a subsidy to the program. So that accounted for a portion of the increase, as well as a small profit in the program. Okay, the next is the school food service program. So there was an increase in the school food service program, and that really was attributable to, you did have a loss from the operations. However, that loss was offset by an interfund transfer from the general fund, which was primarily for unpaid meals. So there was new legislation where if there is a balance left on the children's meals, the general fund is required to subsidize the program. So this year, the unpaid balance was $18,482, and the general fund did subsidize that amount in the current year. The increase in the debt service fund, that did increase $158,583, and that really had to do with the premium that you received this year. You did receive bond proceeds this year, and with the bond proceeds, you received a premium. And that really accounted for the increase in your debt service fund. Then with regards to your capital projects fund, that did increase $34,655,151. And that was primarily due to the issuance of the bond this year. You did have an issuance of $40,440,000 in bond proceeds. You also had $700,000 in bond anticipation notes redeemed from appropriations this year.
as well as you did receive $157,740 in state aid in the capital fund. Then we also had some operating transfers from the general fund. Portion of it was your capital reserve that you appropriated, and a portion was for the budgetary interfund transfer that you had in your budget. So these amounts were offset partially by your current year expenditures, which were for the total for the current year were $15,742,000, and that was really for your capital work that you did in the current year. So this is a chart that I prepared just to kind of just give you an overview of the general fund, fund balance, and what I did was I broke it up into the restricted portion, which is your reserves, and then I have the assigned portion and the unassigned portion. So you'll see that you do have a new reserve this year, and that's for teachers' retirement system. So that was new this year. Finally, legislation did pass that districts were allowed to put monies into the teachers' retirement system reserve. Previously, as you know, you can only put it in for employee retirement system. However, there is restrictions now on what you can put into that reserve. You are restricted to 2% of the prior year TRS salaries. So every year you can only put into that fund up to that 2%. And then there is a maximum of 10% of TRS salaries. So every year the district is required to calculate that number, and they cannot put more money in than what that number comes out to be. So this year you were able to approve the TRS reserve, and you did fund the $1,267,098 for the current year. So that went from zero up to the $1,267,000. With regards to the other reserves, we allocate reserve interest across the board. So some of the change accounted for interest as well as use of the reserve. So for instance, your unemployment insurance reserve did go down, and that was primarily due to use of the reserve of $25,000. So for you had some current year payouts, and then we allocated $14,000 in interest to that reserve. The employee retirement system, which is for your ERS, you have about 3 years worth of expenses in that reserve, and you were able to use that reserve for current year payouts of $2.2 million and allocation of interest of $81,000. Then the employee benefit accrued liability reserve, that's for your compensated absences. So when anybody leaves the district, you are required to pay out vacation and sick time to those individuals. So currently, you do have a long-term liability of $7.9 million on your long-term balance sheet. So this year, you did pay out $400,000 in current year payouts, and then we had interest allocation to that reserve. So that accounted for the change of $335,000 from the prior year. Your restricted for capital is your most restricted out of all your reserves. It requires voter approval to establish that reserve as well as voter approval to spend down the reserve. So this year you did, there was a change of $4.5 million from last year, and you actually used $7 million. You approved the use of that reserve by $7 million, and you also funded that reserve $2.3 million. So that really accounted for the change as well as the allocation of interest. Your restricted for repairs was just the allocation of the interest. And then with regards to the assigned fund balance, you do have appropriated fund balance, $4.5 million, and that's what you have in your 1920 budget. So it is a budget line item. You appropriate from the current year, and you allocate it to next year's budget to maintain the tax levy. Then you have unappropriated fund balance, which is your open purchase orders. So this year you had $934,000 in open purchase orders that got rolled over to next year's budget. And then the unassigned was at 4% last year, which is the maximum that you're allowed to have, 4% of next year's budget. And this year you have 4%. So that's really important to make sure you maintain close to that amount, because if there is any unforeseen expenses or state aid shortfalls, it would come out of that unassigned. So you're at the maximum amount where you can have in that unassigned category. So all in all, the fund balance did go down $4,129,452. And most of it really was the voter approval of the capital reserve, as well as paying out your current payments for your ERS, your employee retirement system reserve. Okay, so that's a snapshot of the general fund. Then I just wanted to go over why, you know, we'll slip back to the other funds. So I'll just touch a little bit. I know I covered most of it, but just the special revenue fund. We talked about the transfer from the general fund of $75,000, as well as you did have a profit. So what happens is that the special revenue sends it back to the general fund for really overhead, and the general fund gets the revenue on that, and there's an expense in the special revenue fund, and you had $140,000 profit this year in the special revenue child care fund. We talked about the school food service fund, so you did have a loss, and then you had the unpaid meals, premium on bond for debt service, and then the capital projects fund. You had primarily the bond is really the big revenue source that came in, and then you had the capital outlay of about $16 million for the current year. So that kind of summarizes the activity on the smaller funds. And then just really a comment, which is in your audit report, is that we felt that the district has very strong overall financial health, and we felt that it was due to continued leadership of the district's board, administration, also the use of cost-effective purchasing procedures, the use of BOCES to get state aids, so BOCES aids, so you use that for a lot of your services, as well as commitment to funding reserves. And the reason why you want to have a strong financial position is really to assist with the state-imposed tax cap, cash flow. It reduces your borrowing and interest costs. It also, as you know, it improves your credit rating. And actually, your district was rated by Standard & Poor's as AAA rating, which is one of only four districts in the New York State receiving that rating. So that's an excellent, excellent result. So it shows you that you are very strong financially and you do have a very strong position. So, which congratulations on that. And then just really bottom line, you want to preserve the program. So it's really important if you do have a strong financial position as well as long-term planning, it will help you so you don't have to cut back on the program, which is really what you want to make sure you don't have to do in the future. So I felt that, you know, really financially the district is very strong, internal control-wise. They do a really good job, and the business office really does a great job. So it was a very positive report this year once again.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions? Nothing. Okay. Well, we couldn't have asked for a better report, okay. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
And I would just like to thank Rich, Jen, and the business office for managing all this so well. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to go back to the financial forecast.
Okay, so the way we look at this is our internal or external audit or financial statement and our audited financial statements give us a one-year snapshot of the year that just passed. So really we look at this as truly closing the books on the 18-19 fiscal year. Just a couple of notes. Things that I think about as I'm hearing the report. If you recall last year, we had a comment about our cafeteria fund or C fund that we had too much fund balance. Ms. Van Dyne said that we had an operational loss in the cafeteria fund. We had to do that in order to get rid of that audit comment. We're only allowed to have 3 months worth of fund balance in that. So we had to spend more than we made in order to get into that 3 month range again. Another thing, and this is really going to be the story of this presentation and what we're looking, and we're trying to, with this presentation, look ahead not only into the 2021 fiscal year, but beyond that, because you'll you'll see that trends happen slowly over time, but they all start to add up, and we want to make sure that we continue on the right path in order to hold on to that AAA Standards and Poor's rating. It did save us a lot of money the last time we went out to borrow. We saved taxpayers roughly $1.3 million with that bond rating with lower interest rates. We know that sometime this year we're going to go out for the rest of that $50 million bond, roughly $8.5 million. So we are hoping that the next time we have that rating call, we once again get that AAA bond rating. So this presentation will give you an idea of what bond ratings, bond raters are looking at, and what we might think about in order to continue the financial health of the district and how to not only preserve the program, but to continue to provide new programs that our community enjoys, takes advantage of, and provides learning opportunities for our students. So just looking at this donut graph, I started out with this just to give you an idea of where our revenues are coming from, because really our story is a story of revenue when we look at our financial strength. Almost 82% of our revenues are local. That is tax levy, pilots. STAR is considered local because it reduces our tax levy. And other receipts we get for the rental of properties, operations, and things like that. Transfers, 5.5%. That has been going up over the last few years. And transfers are those, the use of reserves and fund balance. And I think we're all thinking back to 2015 when the OSC was here and we got that report that, well, we have too much fund balance. But really the report was we have fund balance and it wasn't being used to support our operations. And certainly we can see that over the last 5 years we have been doing that. But we have to keep an eye on how we're going to continue to do that. And 12.7% is state aid. That's about the historical amount. You'll see that our state aid has been going up over the last few years. So state aid is, and this mustard yellow is state aid up here. It accounts for a little over $20 million worth of revenue now. Going back to 2016, that's an increase of about $4.5 million, $4.6 million. Meanwhile, the tax levy, all right, the slope is slightly shallower, but it's a bigger chunk. So our taxes, we're collecting about $6 million more in taxes now than we were in 2016. And those are our two main sources of revenue, state aid and tax levy. This year's budget, the 2020 budget, is $162 million. And you can see if we stack these, tax levy plus state aid is well below that $162 million. And the way we're doing that is using our reserves and fund balance, okay? I'm bouncing around with this. I'm gonna go to the arrow. Some historical expenses. You can see the majority of our expenses are instruction. I didn't break it out with salary plus benefits in this one. Salary plus benefits historically for us is 80% of our total budget. Support. Represents the area of buildings and grounds and other things that are keeping our buildings going. And then other includes things like transportation, debt service, and other administrative costs. But you can see the chunk of it really has to do with people and providing instruction. Looking at it as just a one-year snapshot for this current year budget, instruction is well over half of the pie, right? Almost 60%. Goes direct to instruction in our schools. Benefits accounts for roughly 10%, which is equivalent to our other operating costs of operating our buildings. So it's a very large chunk of the pie. And I know we're always looking for ways to try and get more money towards instruction and less towards the other pieces of our operation. Ms. Van Dyne talked a lot about fund balance. We did some statistics going back to 2015, which really goes back to when the OSC was here two times ago and we got that audit report. And you'll see that at that time when they were here, our reserves were up about to about $38 million. And they were a large chunk. This line across the bars is rather important. It's representing the percentage of expenses compared to fund balance. And when we're looking at this, we also have to think about our budget having gone up. At the time, going back to 2015, our budget was in the $140 million range. We're up to $162 million. So our reserves and fund balance are going down. The percentage of reserves and fund balance since the budget's going up, the percentage of expenses compared to fund balance is going down, right? So this is something that Standards and Poor's will look at our next rating call, because they're going to be looking at where are we generating our revenue, and is revenue keeping pace with our expenses? And in the truest sense, it's not. We certainly have been affording our budgets, but we're affording it by pulling in from our reserves and fund balance. And it's something to keep in mind as we go into the 2021 building of our budget. Broke it out a little bit more. All of these pillars have the same exact profile as the previous chart, but Marianne Van Dyne went through all of these reserve levels. Going back in time, you can see there has been a lot of change. So the green is unassigned. That's our 4%. All right, put that at the top of the stack. The kind of bottom of the chart here, that kind of violet or purple, I guess, magenta, represents the amount of appropriated fund balance that we're taking from the previous year's budget, pushing into the next budget, leftover funds, just to afford our operations and not pass that on to taxpayers. Okay, and you can see that from 2015 to 2016, it went down, but now, as we talked about in our last budget process, that bottom of our pillar is getting larger. And we did that intentionally because we are going into what I call the debt service hump. So in order to afford the debt service, and that it's going to be on the next chart, in order to afford the debt service without raising our taxes to do so for the next couple of years, we increased our appropriated fund balance. We can only do that for a short amount of time. Some other things in this chart, the red represents the creation of a TRS reserve. If you recall, right now we happen to be in a downward trend in TRS payments to New York State, but the last time TRS payments went up, it resulted in reducing positions in districts. Okay, so the intent of the TRS reserve is the next time that TRS rate throttles up, and it will, stock market goes down, TRS compensation rates go up, we have a means to pump reserves in to support that TRS rise so we can hold on to teaching positions in other programs. That's the real intent of that. We have, when the OSC was here in 14-15, they had noticed we had about 7 years worth of ERS reserves. Right now we're at about 3, and that was intentional going into next year's reserve fund presentation, which will occur in June of 2020. We'll expect to bring that back up to a 4% level, or at least keep it at, 4-year level, or at least keep it at a 3-year level. And you can see the capital reserves go up and down as we put money in and then put it to work. I had already talked about this. This is a trend looking at revenues and expenditures and changes in fund balance for all funds. So this blue area at the bottom represents our total reserves and fund balance. They have been going down, okay? And expenses, this line, are now going up faster than the green line, which is revenue, okay? So that is something that we have to keep our eye on and make sure that it's not a trend that accelerates. The debt service hump. Voters pass a bond in 2014. We borrow the funds in 2019. So you can see we have this old debt service that really originated around the year 2000, 2001, which was used to pay for the JFK High School expansion and the addition of libraries at Old Bethpage, Judy Jacobs, Parkway in Pasadena, and some other projects at that time. So that debt service still exists. The community passes a bond in 2014. We now have to borrow. So the new debt goes on top of the old debt. And the old debt doesn't start expiring until 2021, 2022, and that's when you see this hump start to go down again, right? So we pumped in more fund balance in order to afford this temporary increase in debt service without socking it to the taxpayers, right? But we can't sustain that for too long, and we know it's a two-year period. Went the wrong way. Just a little note on what we're doing on the capital fund. The capital fund consists of our bond plus capital reserves plus grant-funded improvements, which we have gotten through New York State, Smart Schools Bond Act, and I also added general fund on the bottom because we do a lot of capital work through the general fund. We traced out how much we have actually spent, so checks actually written for capital projects from July of 2014 to June of 2019. And we were approaching $65 million in written checks for capital work during that five-year span. Meanwhile, also know there's construction in progress. So between that $65 million of work actually paid for and the work in progress during the summer, that work is now exceeding $73 million over the last 5 years. So we're doing extraordinary things that you can see. Old Bethpage classrooms will open soon. We're seeing new windows go in the high school. Our Matlin Middle School and Stratford Road Auditorium HVAC projects are on the verge of getting their building permits. There are things you can see, but we also are doing things that you can't see. The board visited one boiler room out of the five we did work on this summer. So there are things going behind the walls and underneath that continue to support our 60-plus-year-old buildings and really bring them into the next generation of education. Trends to watch. We're continuing to look at the cost of health insurance benefits and try and make that affordable. So that trend continues not only in the school district but really across the country. We have to have more conversations about our increasing reliance on using reserves and appropriated fund balance in the revenue budget. We can sustain it for a little bit longer, but not that much longer, because you can see we're on a downward slope there. We never know about the future costs of legislative unfunded mandates from state and federal governments. I know we often get mad with the State Education Department, but that's not where the unfunded mandates are coming from. They're coming from the legislature, okay? And SED is left to deal with them. So we have to stay in touch with their elected officials on that. Wage escalation, annual minimum wage continues to increase, and we are scaling the rest of our salaries, particularly our non-contract salaries, against that. But it's also something that's in the mind of some bargaining units who have hourly wages and trying to keep pace with that increase in minimum wage. And also, we're hearing a lot about the potential for a recession based on certain economic indicators. Very proud of the AAA bond rating. We'll work hard to retain it. I expect that we will in our next bond rating call, which will probably be in the early winter. We're actually, in order to go out to borrow, we have to wait for the final three projects of bond-related work to be approved by SED. So once they do that, which includes the work of retiling the POB Middle School swimming pool and a couple of electrical projects, we can go out and borrow the rest. We do expect the financial future to remain positive. We do keep our heads up, and we'll talk more in depth about a financial forecast as we move into budget season. And we do update it twice a year, taking in new economic indicators, looking at staffing levels and things like that. Very proud of our last budget cycle, where we started developing other five-year departmental plans: music, art, curriculum review cycle, textbook adoptions, technology and facilities. The things that I'm most proud of with this is that those who created them understand that they change. So, for example, music and art presented theirs last year. I know music, at least I didn't speak to Dr. Wiley about this, but the music department talked about their five-year departmental plan in September at that department meeting. They're already making changes to it to address changing needs in the department. And really, that's what we need to do. It helps us keep us kind of on a steady fiscal course and keeps everybody looking ahead, because I think everybody understands we don't want big variations in budgets but it also helps us plan for the future. And of course, we continue to thank our supportive community here in Plainview. With that, do you have any questions?
Lauren?
And Rich, I'm sorry if you've answered this question already, but back to the slide that had the debt service challenge. How come prior to the bond we couldn't dip deeper into it and pay off bigger chunks when we had the financial flow?
So is there like we're back here?
Yes.
So the district did do advanced refinancing of bonds. Municipal bonds aren't callable in the sense that you can't pay them off early like a mortgage.
Okay.
However, there is a period of time where you can do an advanced refunding for a lower interest rate. So after the recession, you know, 2008, interest rates are really low. The district did go back and refinance that debt for a lower interest rate.
Okay.
However, we're prohibited from advance payment. We literally can't do it.
Okay. So,
and there's also no reserve for future principal and interest payments that we can legally have.
That was before I was on the board, so I just wanted to ask the question.
Okay.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Other questions? Seth?
Okay, so to follow up on the debt service stuff, so we have a debt service reserve of about $462,000. That reserve can only be used for payment of the principal interest that we already know.
So you went into the financial statements and found that number in the debt service reserve.
It was in Marianne's presentation.
Okay. So that came that was actually a bond premium.
Okay.
Okay. So when the debt was sold, the debt came with an interest rate, and then the offeror presented a premium which lowered the effective interest rate. That premium is going to be used to in the next fiscal year to help pay the debt service.
And
so that's already been kind of accounted for.
It's already been accounted for.
Right.
So the debt service comes straight out of the general fund.
Yes.
Okay.
However, that premium is going to be used to in part of the equation.
Okay. So of the debt of the nearly $6 million, that already includes roughly $500,000 in there.
Yes.
The EBLR reserve. I know Marianne mentioned that we have about $7.9 million in liability.
Mm-hmm.
Our reserves only have $7.3 million in it.
Mm-hmm.
Do I understand it correctly that assumes that every employee is retiring today and you have to play the whole thing out?
Right.
Okay.
So just to kind of get into that reserve is about $1 million less now than it was in 2015.
Right.
Of course, we had a number of retirements, right? We
right.
had a good number of retirements. And it's very rare to fully fund that reserve because it's unrealistic to think everyone's going to retire tomorrow, right? Unless everyone's handing in their 30-day notice.
Right.
And many people can't anyway, right? So once again, the philosophy I think we need to have is how do we put taxpayer money to work, right? So we've been doing that through the capital reserve. That's really fiscally responsible because you're doing capital projects at a cost that's less than going out for another bond, right? Because there's
Bless
no principal
you.
And interest payment
right.
on that. So if we keep that EBLR reserve and other reserves reasonable, and we keep them in mind, we don't keep them shrinking, right? We look for opportunities to move money in as economics allow us to, then we're in a good spot. But I think we're all in a place right now where we want to make sure that, you know, our community pays a lot in taxes. We want to give them the best value for their money, not only educationally, but we want to provide the best service and the best facilities we can for our students and our community.
The last, I'm going to say set of questions, mm-hmm. perhaps, that I have is related to ERS and TRS. So ERS has roughly, we went from 7 years reserve to about 3 years reserves. That accounting, based upon the years, is based upon the current total payroll that is ERS, right? And assumes no changes in that amount.
Right, so actually.
As the total payroll goes up, the 3 years becomes 2.5 years, let's say.
But there's also the effect of
of the change in the percentage of ERS.
Right. Right. So we thought long and hard about that. All right. For two consecutive years, the ERS rate has been essentially the same, even though the market's throttling along. So what, assuming that we don't suddenly crash the economy, another safe bet is that the ERS percentage will go down a little bit next year, right? Which, if we just keep things the same, now we've actually grown.
So what's the sweet spot? If there is one. I mean,
well, I think the reason why the district we've chosen 4 years is if we look at the recession of 2008 and previous recessions, it takes at least 4 years to climb back, right? So that is gotcha. Something that's supposed to make your operation recession resistant. That's
so,
the idea.
So following that same thought process, even though there are restrictions and it just got built, the TRS should have roughly best practice 4 years worth, right?
Yes.
And the $1.2 million right now is not even a year worth,
right?
No. Right, like a fraction of that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, the TRS reserve will never get as robust. I mean, as
well by law, statutorily, you're not allowed to go up by a certain, a certain amount. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, for the last like 10 years, we've been forecasting, and we've been pretty good at what we're doing. For the next forecast, what do you see is going to be our most urgent thing that we're going to have to really consider doing, pulling back, or whatever? We've talked about going off the cliff. What year would it happen with the cap and everything else? What's your biggest concern as we go forward?
All right, so I'm going to put on two hats, and I can see Dr. Lewis looking at me. All right, so you have the business official in me, right? Which is like you always have to levy your cap, all right, up to your cap. However, I know I'm working with the school board that does not want to do that, all right? 2% is your glass ceiling, okay? Even though when we compute the tax levy limit, this year we were up at like 3.5, 3.4, right? So the thing that keeps me up at night is how do we balance that, okay? How do we balance a school district that is on an upward trajectory in so many ways and be looking forward enough to make sure that we don't step in a pothole? And I think just by having these conversations is really helpful. Because there might be years, okay, one way we could do this is, okay, there's a year where we're not going to put money into the capital reserve. That's not what our minds are telling us to do, because we've been having great success. We see the community supporting the continued improvement and rehabilitation of our buildings, but we might have to go through a year or two like that so that we're not, you know, kind of pulling that out of the revenue stream, because that does get incorporated into the equation and it's hard to see. So if we look at the money that we put into capital reserves this year, even, you know, $3 million, then there was an additional pump in of $1.2 million in August, all right, where we took money through resolution out of the unemployment reserve and put that in the capital reserve. So really, we put $4.2 million in. What if we didn't do that, right? What if, that somehow is not put into capital, it's put back into these reserves, and then that starts to build the ERS reserve again and some other reserves, and then we can, you know, move forward again. It's we need to see where state aid's going to come in. That's an issue. You know, there'll be another push for foundation aid, and an increase in foundation aid doesn't necessarily help us.
Right.
We're getting most of our state aid boost through BOCES, by using BOCES. You have to spend to get it. And we're getting state aid through our building projects now. However, that comes off your tax levy, right? So that's a deduction. So it's really a balancing act. Keeping our staffing in line with our enrollment. That's really, you know, our biggest area of expense. So, I know Dr. Molieri does a full review of that as we go through every year. And, you know, we don't want to be in a position where you have to come to the board someday and say, hey, you know, in order to make sure the tax levy stays below 2%, you're going to have to reduce four positions. We don't want to be in that.
And it's important to note that this year's budget, we increased by about 9 FTEs. That's 9 more staffing positions. In the past budgets, we increased in the capital line. Those don't carry benefits. Mm-hmm. You know, that once you spend the capital, that's it. But we, for the right reasons, increased our staffing by quite a bit. And that is going to carry the benefits associated right. with mm-hmm. salaries. It's 80% of the budget is staffing and salaries. So when we planned our budgets last year, I told our principals and budget managers that we just can't keep that going. We have spent every FTE that we had in breakage. In addition to, we have no more. We had a need today that was surfaced for 0.44 FTEs, and I had to say to that budget manager, we don't have it in the budget. We have to look to some grant funding to do it. So we've added quite a few FTEs for breakage. They're gone. And we also added staffing. So that's not something we can continue into the future because that has its implications on the budget.
You know, and our budget process is transparent. Everything we have on the budget is on the line. There's nothing, you know, we don't move money in order to afford things that we haven't already put before the voters. It's there. So when we get to the end of the year, that really helps us hit our budget goals. You know, we wanted to tighten up how much was left over at the end of the year. We didn't want excess fund balance there, and we're coming within 4% of budgeted expenditures every year. And if you could do that at home, that would be something. So budget That's performance true. Wise, we're doing very well.
I just want to say how proud I am of everybody, because when other school districts were cutting programs, cutting sports, cutting staffing, cutting kindergarten, we were adding in every single department. And I think that has a lot to do with how we have budgeted and the concerns that we have had, and where we've had to walk that slippery slope on things. We always see it on the part of kids. And that's what it's all about. But thanks a lot, Rich.
Any other questions? I just want to comment quickly. You spoke a little bit about the 5-year departmental plans, and I think it really helped us in analyzing the budget and understanding. And you're right, it is going to change. But it really helped us when we were going through the budget, so thank you. And again, I want to thank you, Jen, and the business department for such thoughtful and careful planning. Thank you very much. Okay, now we're going to go on to public participation once again. District policy number 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall, one, state their name and address, and two, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking, if a non-resident. The policy prohibits public discussion on matters relating to staff and students at which their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process, or those of others could in some way be violated. As a reminder, an audio recording of this meeting, including public participation, is being made and will be posted on the district website. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. We thank you in advance for being respectful of other speakers, the Board of Education, and all staff members. The floor is now open.
Hi, my name is Mary Anthony Glykos. I live at 16 Foxwood Road. I have 3 children in the district, one at the high school, one at Matlin, and one at OB Elementary. And I moved here 3 years ago for the schools, for the teachers.
and for the education that my children receive in Plainview. And it's really disheartening to know that these teachers do not have a contract.
Corrine Kiriakou, I'm at 14 Palace Street in Plainview. I presently have two children in the district. My oldest just graduated in June and is in college now studying computer engineering. And across the entire spectrum from kindergarten all the way to 12th grade, I have found that the teachers have gone above and beyond, extraordinary teachers, and really prepared my son extraordinarily well to be at a really competitive college. And I feel like teachers go above and beyond when they feel respected and valued. And I'm concerned that not working without a contract really diminishes that capacity for them to feel well respected. So I implore you to consider that. They're our greatest educational resource. As an educator myself, I'm concerned that they're working without a contract. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jacques Wolfner, 151 Sutton Drive in Plainview. I hesitate to talk about education because we have professionals here who really know their stuff. However, I've noticed something on the streets that Dr. O'Meara should take note. That's bicycle safety. I see young people, and I assume they're students, riding on the sidewalk. When I've been out on my daily walk, I've been forced off the sidewalk by these students. I see by these bicycle riders, I should be more precise. I've seen bicycle riders riding on the wrong side of the street, riding against traffic. They're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to ride on the in the direction of traffic at the extreme right of the street. The New York State driver manual states that too. Of course, bicycle riders don't read the driver manual, but I think it's up to our education system to impress on these our students when they're riding a bicycle to follow the rules of the road and not to ride on the sidewalk and to ride safely. Thank you.
So noted. Thank you very much. Seeing no other speakers, public participation is now closed. We appreciate and will consider your input. Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, we're going to go on to new business. 11.1, can I get a motion on what? Oh, we didn't do routine business yet. Okay. Can I have a motion for... What are we doing? Okay. Can I have a motion on routine business? Thank you, Ginger. Second. Lauren, any holds, separations? Jody?
I would like to separate 7.22, please.
Thank you. And we're holding.
Hold 7.18.
Right.
And separate 8.1.
And separate 8.1. Okay. So with the exception of 7.22, 7.18, and 8.1, all those in favor of routine business? Thank you. Can I get a motion on 7.22? Ginger, a second. Tara? All those in favor of 7.22? Abstentions? Thank you, Jody. Can I get a motion on 8.1? Ginger, second. Lauren, all those in favor of 8.1? Those against? Thank you.
The motion passes. Now we're going to go on to new business. Can I have a motion on 11.1 to accept the 2018-2019 internal audit report on review of attendance, the corrective action plan, and the management response? Seth, a second. Jody, any discussion? All those in favor? Can I have a motion on 11.2? Ginger, a second. Seth, all those in favor? Opposed? Can I have a motion on 11.3? Oh, we already did that. 11.4, agreement. Jody, second. Tara, all those in favor? Can I have a motion on 11.5, confidential Schedule A? Ginger, second. Jody, all those in favor? Can I get a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of discussing collective bargaining negotiations? Seth, second. Tara, all those in favor? Thank you very much. Drive home safely.